Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips of the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th of August, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Last week, a report revealed that Google continues to collect location data from users, even when location history is disabled in its option. The company was unapologetic, but did change its location policy. Now a man in California is going to court to accuse Google of violating the state's privacy laws. The issue came down to the labeling of various features in Google's activity controls menu. A slider control on the location history section seems to state that this is a one-stop shop to prevent Google hanging on to your location data, but that wasn't entirely true. In order to fully opt out of having your location activity stored by Google, you have to also pause the web and activity control as well. This is acknowledged if a user digs deeper into Google's product documentation. At the time, Google defended itself, saying we provide clear descriptions of these tools and robust controls so people can turn them on or off and delete their histories at any time. On Friday, it changed the wording to its on its support page to make it clear that some Google services would continue to follow you around. Friday was also the day that Napoleon Patassel filed a lawsuit against Google in San Francisco federal court and requested a judge grant the case class action status so that other Google users could join in. Patassel presents as evidence that the Associated Press's map of activity that was recorded when a volunteer turned off location history and moved around Manhattan. It also includes screenshots of Google's unaltered policy and claims the company's principal goal was to surreptitiously monitor plaintiff and class members and to allow third parties to do the same. The biggest question the courts will have to consider is whether or not Google met its legal obligation to obtain consent from its users. Does burying all of the information a user needs deep within separate documents and separate web pages adequately inform a user about what they're agreeing to? If all the information is collected in one document located at a separate portal, would that qualify as sufficient explanation of a company's policies? By changing its policies last week, it appears that Google understands some users would be confused by its previous approach. But that doesn't mean it's admitting any wrongdoing, only that it's responding to user feedback. If this suit is granted class action status, practically every breathing American could potentially join in as a plaintiff. It does not specify an amount for the damages it hopes the courts will award, but California reserves the right to revoke the business license of a company that violates its Privacy Act.
Oops.
On the same day that Patassel filed his lawsuit, activists from the Electronic Privacy Information Center sent a letter to the Federal Trade Commission encouraging it to investigate Google for potentially violating a consent decree it signed with that agency in 2011. At that time, the company was accused of using deceptive tactics and violating its own privacy promises. Google agreed not to engage in future privacy misrepresentations and periodic independent audits of its privacy practices for the next 20 years, which we're still in the middle of. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you, is do you worry that you're being tracked by your cell phone? The choices are yes, I thought I had turned it off. Well, now it does. I wish I went somewhere interesting. And what about my rotary dial wall phone? So far, we have 24 votes, and I wish I went somewhere interesting is first. But I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, you will see the first link is the forums. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the first item under poll discussion is not there.
Where'd it go?
I don't know. That's a lovely question. I don't know where it went. Well, harumph.
That was on another website you managed.
I put it somewhere else. Okay, so never mind that. You can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And what's interesting is even though Google might not be tracking you as much, your cell carrier is. Your phone has to know where it is so it can ring. And you see it in cop shows all the time. If it's in the cop show, the real cops are probably doing it better.
Right.
But, yeah, you triangulate your cell position. And that's actually going to get better or worse depending on your viewpoint with 5G cell network. 5G is a shorter range than current 4G towers, so they need more towers, which means your location is going to be known to an even closer distance.
Right. And you're absolutely right. Every cell phone carrier is tracking you. Whether it's Apple or Android, they're tracking you. If you've turned on GPS,
That's a closer track. Yeah. But
they're all tracking you all the time.
Right. Fortunately, the Supreme Court just ruled a couple weeks ago that police have to get a warrant for long-term tracking data from the cell company. And that seemed to be the key because... In the specific case that was being heard, the police got like 3 months worth of data, and that was too much.
Right.
So now the laws and courts are going to have to rule what's enough and what's too much. So if I only want a week's worth of data, do I need to get a warrant?
Right.
Or a day's worth or an hour's worth? We don't know yet.
But it doesn't matter because somebody is keeping those data for 6 months.
Yep.
Or whatever the number is. So... it's an interesting issue, and we'll see. We'll keep you informed. And of course you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Ed did from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's your question?
Hi guys. I know that there's an extension for Chrome called Crackbook, which allows you to delay the opening of pages when you go to certain sites. You select the sites. I'm wondering if there's something similar for IE or whatever it's called now, and Firefox.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think. There's one called Delay Sites for Firefox.
Okay.
The Crackbook is the plugin for Chrome.
Right.
Which adds a forced delay.
Which is what I'm looking for.
Right. And the Firefox add-on is called Delay Sites, all one word.
Okay. And that's an extension.
It's the same sort of add-on thing. That Crackbook is, and I don't honestly know if there's one for Edge. That's a lovely question. I don't know. I really don't know. I'm sorry. I have
to look into it.
Microsoft's store is not really available to me on this Chromebook.
Right.
So I can't really look it up, but I do not see one in the list that I do have available to me.
Okay.
Sorry.
Is there a way that somebody could post it on a forum or something so that if one of the listeners knows, we can use their resources?
Yes, on the Soundbites website, there is the forums down on the right. We just talked about that. And the second one down is the poll discussion, but the first one is the show discussion, where people can, if they find something, post
an answer to something that we might have not.
Right.
We could have say one opinion and state, you know, we'll do this, and other folks have other experiences, and they post that there too.
Right. Okay, great.
All right.
So keep checking back, and if because people download this show all week long.
Right.
We have hundreds and hundreds of people who watch, download the podcast, and also, of course, watch the YouTube channel, and so an answer could pop up anytime.
Okay. I'll check it. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's a lot of people don't like things that take forever to load, and if you can delay that load or prevent it from happening. The one that's getting me right now is Forbes.com.
Oh, yeah.
They insist on loading a video. And then if you scroll down, that video, at least on my machines, pops down into the lower left corner.
Yeah, you try to scroll.
And covers the story.
It follows you down the page.
That makes me insaner.
Oh, that's annoying as all get out.
And yet they don't care. They don't care.
No,
I get it. But that's the way it is. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. Oh, two things I wanted to say. One thing, I know a lot of people are so interested in running Google apps or the Play Store apps on their Chromebook, but I want to let people know that there is another way to run those kind of things on a Windows laptop, and that's a program called BlueStacks.
Yep.
So, and it works quite well, probably not as efficiently as the Chromebook does, but it's a nice way to get to those kind of things on a Windows machine.
Right. Thanks. Yep.
Yeah. And the second thing is Greenlight is coming to my neighborhood.
Yay!
So if anybody lives in the Greenlight district, that's going to basically run from Elm Grove down Straub Road to Long Pond, Long Pond to Ridgeway, and Ridgeway back down to Elm Grove. So basically all the neighborhood behind Unity Hospital.
Yeah.
That is the new Greenlight district.
Nice.
So what you need to do, if you are in that area, go to greenlightnetworks.net. greenlightnetworks.com works, I think. I'm waiting for it to appear right now, but and you get to sign up, and signing up doesn't
guarantee
it doesn't obligate you to anything. It just says you're interested. Yeah, greenlightnetworks.com works.
Yeah, so they are accepting orders.
Yeah,
now.
So check availability if you're not signed up. Sign up if you're in that neighborhood. They will they prioritize based on how many people in a neighborhood are clamoring for the service. Hint, you should all be.
Yeah, but you know what? Like in my neighborhood.
Yeah, I know. You're very upset.
Yeah, because the area that they defined goes behind me.
Yeah.
And those are all older folks. And I got two chances of that happening.
Yeah, I know.
Slim and none.
I know. I feel bad for you. I do.
That ticks me off because it's literally down the street.
Well, that's kind of the problem people are going to have, say, like on Straub Road. I live off of Straub, but I live in a neighborhood, if you're coming, say, from a Long Pond, I live in the neighborhood that is west of Straub, and that's part of that district. If you live across the street on Straub, you're sunk.
Right.
That's not part of the Greenlight district that they're putting in.
Well, not part of that particular.
Down the road, but you have no access.
But Mark, I got it. So the people across the street from me have it.
Yep,
I that's don't. Exactly what he's saying.
So you got to run a wire over the.
But this is one of the same thing here. You know, between going down Long Pond, if you're across the street from the hospital, you're sunk.
Yeah,
you know, so that's just kind of how it is. But as people get it and they talk and, you know, start telling people, the more you tell people, the more likely you are to be connected, you know.
And I think this is one of the first installations west of the Genesee, too.
Right. The big thing you have to understand is that with any of these things, whether it's Greenlight or some other company doing some other thing, you can only do so much at once. And so, you know, they're building it out as they build it out, but it's not a, an instant thing. Listen, we got to take a break.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Why, that's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Computer problems? Get answers from the experts. Soundbites, noon to 2 Saturdays, only on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Patrick from Batavia on the line. Hi, Patrick. What's up?
Hey, guys. I have an interesting situation. I heard you talking about the 100 megabit question. In Batavia, we have an option now. It's only they're really pushing the 1 gigabit, and it's very reasonably priced. I won't do a commercial for them because they're not sponsors. But what are your thoughts on this? I consider I have an older machine and like 2 gig of RAM, so I'm trying to look, other than buying a new machine, to optimize this. Would you see any considerations that I should be thinking about?
In terms of, do you need gigabit?
Well, yeah, I guess for all of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I could deal more with it. Could I use it? Because there are some situations where I seem to have had some issues, but I'm wondering, would I be able to use it with an older system with a smaller amount of RAM, or would any more RAM help, or...
Well, it's two things. First, if you are on wireless, your maximum speed is probably 24 megabits, no matter what you're getting.
Yeah, what I did is I have like 4 computers, so I normally would have my laptop sitting in front of my desktop. So I realized, hey, I've got 4 slots on the back of the router, so I just plugged the cable in,
and
I've got 2 of them. Now, with my service, I generally run between 91 and 97 down and 15 to 20 up.
Right. And are you finding that that is constraining you in any way?
Well, of course, it complicates things because I just started doing that recently. I had run into a situation where I was doing a Zoom webinar, and it seemed to be the service was a little sluggish. So
yeah.
I was wondering if maybe I came over or I had considered upgrading it.
Right. Well, here's the thing.
$15 a month more,
right?
And they did say I could do it on a trial basis. But I guess I'm just looking for some thoughts of what you think might be any constraints on.
There's several constraints. First is, what is the speed of your Ethernet connection? Older machines often only have 100 megabit connectors.
Yeah, I checked it. It does have the gig option.
All right. So, but that's one of the things to check. Does each device have gigabit Ethernet?
Strangely, the desktop had a gig. The laptop had 100 meg. So I thought that was weird. I expected it to be the other way around.
Right. But anyway, I did
look into that part.
Right. So you'll never get more than 100 megabits on your laptop.
Right.
No matter what else you do. But gigabit is good. So then you have to worry about if everything plugs directly into your own router, and it is a gigabit router, then you'll get that kind of speed. It gets very complicated.
The company provided the router. I called them, and they said, let me check hold music, and I came back, and they said, yeah, your machine would work with that.
Well,
you know, there's always the question, is it going to be worthwhile and all that? And the good news out of this, they would actually let me do it for a month or two.
It certainly can't hurt to try it. The problem with some of the video things is that the issue may not, it could be at your end being a video card problem, the card being not capable of keeping up. But
it
could also be their end. If they're doing a multicast and it's not, their machine isn't powerful enough, or their network connection, let's say they got 1,000 people on that connection, that may be overwhelming their end of the connection. You may have 10 gigabits and the fastest machine on the planet, but if it's not sending you the data fast enough, then you're not getting the data fast enough. If you go to something like YouTube or watch a movie on Netflix or whatever, and that's fast, then you know that the issue is not your machine.
All right.
Or your connection.
My big question is, I wanted to start eliminating things. Would RAM have any positive impact, like going from 2 to 8 gig RAM?
If you've only got 2 gig of RAM, you need more. If you're going to be doing a lot of video stuff and multitasking and things like that.
I'm sorry, more RAM would be better, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
More RAM would probably be quite useful for some things. Not for video itself, but while you're watching video, other things are going on in the background. And if it has to swap, then you get stutter.
Like you're reading your email in one window while you have a video playing in another window.
Right. Yeah, the more RAM just gives you, think of it this way, a bigger dance floor. Yep. Bigger dance floor to things to happen. Versus, you know, like the internet is taking up one part of it and, you know, just other day-to-day processing behind the scenes is over in this other corner. So the more RAM, it's just a bigger dance floor.
Right. And so, in general...
What I'm hearing you say then, if I just minimize my work and focus on one thing, that won't be such a big issue.
Well, that's the thing I would suggest you try first because it's the cheapest thing to do. And if that works, then you win. If it doesn't, then increase your RAM. And then if that doesn't do enough for you, then certainly you can, you know, particularly since they give you a month as a trial, try it.
And all right, let me ask you this other question. How old is the machine you currently have?
All right. I'm sorry, this connection isn't really good. How old or what?
How old is the machine you're currently talking about?
Oh, my gosh, it's probably 6-7 years old.
Yeah.
All right, another option, and it's a relatively inexpensive one, is to look at a Chromebook. Whereas, you know, you're not going to invest a heck of a lot, $300, say. You'd have a brand new machine, faster processor, and it's designed to work better on the web.
Also, there are a couple of other things. If it's a six-year-old machine... what version of Windows are you running?
Oh, you don't want to hear it.
Yeah, that's what I thought. The other thing is it a 32?
Not Dave, you don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
How many times have I told you not to use that one anymore?
Is it a 32-bit version of Windows? Adding more RAM isn't really going to help.
All right, I'll say it. Just cover your ears. It's a Windows 7 Premium 64-bit.
Okay, 64-bit is good. But how fast, how good, you know, if it's a six-year-old machine, how good is the video card?
Yeah.
You may simply not have, your entire problem may well be simply the fact that the video card doesn't have the oomph to keep up with what's being pushed with
especially if you're using onboard video.
Right. So the problem, Patrick, is that you can change everything piecemeal, but as we've said so many times, there's always a bottleneck, and you're just moving the bottleneck around.
Same hammer my grandfather used. Yeah. Replaced the head twice and the handle three times, but it's the same hammer.
It's the same hammer. but the basic problem here really is that somebody's got to do a full analysis of your machine before they can tell you where the likely bottleneck is now.
You gave me some things to look at and considerations, and I appreciate that. What I'm doing is kind of a hobby, so to go out and buy a new machine, just, you know, kind of screw around. I just was intrigued by the idea to be able to get up to a gigabit for a reasonable price.
Well, it is a very reasonable price.
If a car drives 150 miles an hour with a speed limit 65, I mean, you can only go 65, right?
Right. You buy a Porsche 911 and you take it to the store to buy milk.
Can go 150 miles an hour. Right. That's all you need.
But the one nice thing about going to a Chromebook is, one, you don't have to hear any criticism about what version of Windows you're on. You don't have to put up with viruses. You don't put up with spyware. You don't put up with malware.
The real question is, the video stuff you're doing, is it proprietary? If it is and it only runs under Windows, then you're kind of stuck with Windows. But
I think that's it. I'm good with Chromebook. I have a couple.
Yep.
But the issue on this particular Zoom program I'm using, I believe, only runs Windows.
Yeah. But I would look more. I would look at the video. Well, certainly, like I said, for $15 a month as a test, and they'll let you drop back if you need to. Try the gig and see what happens. But I doubt that that's your problem. I sincerely think your issue is going to, you're going to find your issue is video card.
Especially if that video card, if you look at the back of the machine and you're using what they call the onboard video,
it doesn't take up a slot.
If it's not taking up a slot, you're using the onboard video. So if you really, depending on what you want to spend, get a regular video card. So it's separate, okay, because that video memory takes away from that 2 gig that you're using.
Okay, right. I'm using that program called Speccy that somebody mentioned quite a while ago, and it tells you all about your machine.
Right.
And it looks like this is a 895 megabyte ATI Radeon 3000 graphics.
That's not bad.
No, that's a good one.
That's not bad. That's not bad. That should do you for this. So it is possible that it's simply the driver. Like I said, you need to start troubleshooting. The easiest thing to do first is to increase your speed. But honestly, 100 megabits should be fine.
So you're really thinking I should stick with what I got?
Well, like I said, it cannot hurt for a month. Spend $15
for
and give it a try and see what happens.
That was the kind of the clincher, but it was weird that I called them back and they were kind of like talking me out of it. Then I went down to a place that sells the stuff here and they said, if you're a high-end gamer, but, you know, and this guy loves to sell stuff. And he said, I can't see it, I don't know if you're wasting your money.
Well, he's mostly right, but for $15,
people that sell it aren't. No,
well, again, then they're honest,
right?
Because they're good. Yeah. They're not trying to just sell you something just for the sake of selling it. They're asking the right question, and they're the type of folks that you want to stick with because they're giving. You know, it's a lost sale for them. But it's better to have a customer that's happy. Because you're honest with them.
When I was selling, I always did the same thing. If I didn't feel it would help the customer, I wouldn't sell it to them.
I won't. It's just like when people bring in the machines and they say, is this worth upgrading? I'm honest with them. Yeah, I could sell them a bunch of other stuff, but it's like, why put the money into it? You know, you can change the wrapping on a package, but the content usually still stays the same.
Mm-hmm. And for most...
I still look the same.
Yeah.
All right. Shave or a beer, and I still got the same face. One more quick question, just to make it worthwhile for a bigger audience. What kind of person do you think would hear, or what kind of situation would hear a gigabit download, and it's only 50 upload, but still it's twice what I get now, and say, wow, that's perfect for me?
Well, certainly if you have a business, being able to get that kind of speed is important.
Yeah,
if you've got...
Sharing with multiple people.
Right. If you've got a house full of 50 people or a business full of 50 people. Then,
or a kid that streams video all day
long.
Yeah.
That's all it takes there. But the more people streaming, a gigabit gives you not only faster stuff, but also a wider path. So you get more people doing video without a problem. Now, like I said, when my daughter was home, we're on Greenlight, and I've got a gigabit router and a gigabit switch and a gigabit everything else. So my daughter would be Skyping with a friend while she was downloading some stuff and playing a game, and my wife is watching something on Netflix, and I'm watching an entirely different thing on Netflix while I'm downloading the next version of Linux. And we did all of that fine on 100 megabit. So for the average user, 100 megabits is fine, but... you got to have all the right hardware, and that means from the router out.
Mm-hmm.
Right, from the modem, although, of course, they're not actually modems when you're talking about fiber. But from the modem out, you have to have all the right stuff. Now, Greenlight gives you the right modem. So from really the router, your router out, it has to be all the right stuff. And I've got a gigabit router, a very fast gigabit router to a very fast gigabit switch to et cetera, et cetera. And so that all works. But you really have to be careful to understand all the pieces and parts all the way down the line, and that includes your hard drive, and that includes your RAM, and that includes your video card, and all of that stuff. But like I said, for $15, it's an awfully cheap troubleshoot.
Yeah, and be a fun experiment. So, guys, thank you very much. I do, as always, appreciate your patience and your great, clear explanations.
Thanks, Patrick.
Can't ask for any more than that.
Yep, thanks. Have fun.
And we'll see you at the Rochester Googles.
Yes, you will. Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep. I think I'm going to have to apologize to our YouTube stream listeners. I forgot my power cord at the office, and my battery is just about dead. And apparently the phone charger that is here in the studio is not enough for a computer.
Hey, there's a shock.
So if anybody is real close and has a USB-C charger for a computer...
Can't help you. I don't...
I know. Yours is custom, right?
It's custom.
Yeah. All the newer stuff is going to USB-C.
Right. Yeah. That would be fine if I had a new... This is a very old Chromebook.
I might try to bring it up on the iPad, because there is an iPad charger there.
Yeah, that's right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ramey, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Ray from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Ray. What's up?
I'm wondering how secure documents that I have on Google Drive are.
Sort of. What? Okay, here's the deal. Externally, Google does a very good job of keeping the bad guys out, at least they have so far. Internally, nobody knows what's going on, obviously.
They say it's encrypted.
They say it's encrypted, and I believe them, and I believe that they do not have the key. But the thing that you can do to protect yourself is you can encrypt them yourself before you send them up.
Okay.
So that...
How do you do that?
Well, there's 100 different ways.
Okay, all right. You have to have some kind of software to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What are you using? Microsoft Office?
No, actually, we kind of been using between a Mac and an iPhone and an iPad, and we were like traveling and we're getting documents email wise, and then kind of like uploading those documents to Drive, so we had access to them wherever we were at.
Well, email is completely insecure, so don't worry about storing them on Drive.
Right. Yeah, email is very insecure.
Okay. So in other words, anything that may contain some financial data probably shouldn't be left on Google Drive, is what you're saying.
Well, shouldn't be emailed to anyone. Email is like a postcard. Anyone can read it along the way.
Okay. Well, these were like banks and real estate people kind of thing.
They should have given you an upload site that you would upload it directly to their server.
Right. So Google does encrypt things that are sent to their drive. So they are encrypted when they get there.
There goes the battery.
Yeah, battery's done. So that, in terms of that, if you're uploading them from your machine to Google Drive,
correct,
that is a secure connection from your machine to Google Drive, and Google encrypts it when it gets there. And the same thing when you download it, it downloads it, it decrypts it, so that's secure if people have the correct password or you've given them access rights in some other way. So that's okay. The question that we have is about email. Email is not secure. It has never been secure, and it will never be secure.
They're trying to make it secure.
They're working on it, but right now, right. They may be secure in the future.
Well, there's always a downgrade attack. You get a malicious mail server that says, oh, I don't understand security, and currently the protocol says, okay, here's the plain text.
Right. But Google Drive does have a bunch of security measures to protect files in the cloud, But of course, when you bring it down to your mobile device, that goes through your carrier.
Cellular.
And that's, I don't know of a carrier that encrypts. I believe most of that is unencrypted.
So using Google Drive as a secondary backup for important files off, say, a Mac is probably not the smartest thing to do.
No, doing it from a Mac is very smart because, like I said, your connection to Google is encrypted and Google itself is encrypted.
Okay.
It's when somebody brings them down to a cellular device that there may not be any encryption.
All right. So if I try to bring it to my iPhone or my iPad via, you know, a home network, that's not totally secure.
If you use the Google Drive app, it should be, because it would encrypt it inside the cell signal.
Right.
But if you use the Google website, maybe, yeah, theoretically, yes, but maybe not.
Right. And certainly if you send it to somebody in some other way, like through email, it is not secure at all.
Okay. I think that kind of answers my question. Thank you very much.
Yep-er.
Okay.
All right. Have fun.
There are services that do offer secure file transfer, but how secure are they?
Well, right. Yeah,
you upload your file to them, and it sends it to the other person.
Right.
So theoretically, if there's a bug in their software, they can, or if they just don't do it right, they can read any file that goes through their system.
Right. Right. And of course, you know, somebody's going to call up and say, well, I don't trust Google. Okay. The reality is Google gets 100 billion gigabytes a day of stuff. And so the likelihood that they even care about what you're sending or will deal with it in some way. Now, they go through a lot of stuff and pull out information that they want anonymized. That is to say, they don't know it's your information. And they are watched very carefully by any number of agencies, as we've seen by the lawsuits going on. But the reality is that they are pretty good about it because they don't want to be sued any more than they're already being sued. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Rochester, New York. Hi, Mike, what's up?
Yeah, I know you guys like Chromebooks, and my question is, I was pricing some the other day, and the ones that I looked at, they start at 400 and they go up to 600 beans. If that's the case, why couldn't or shouldn't you get a nice desktop instead? I mean, I don't understand the, I know that, you know, mobility, et cetera, but.
Right.
Just comparing apples to apples, you know, which would be a better approach?
Well, it depends on what it is you want to do.
And that is the whole question. Do you want to be mobile? Get a portable device if you don't mind sitting at a desk all the time, the same desk.
And paying for an operating system.
Well, no, even a Chromebox.
There's a couple of things. Yeah. Right. Now, there's a couple of things. First, are you in that $600, including the monitor and the keyboard and the mouse? Particularly if you get a decent monitor, that's going to jack the price up significantly. I know people who have Chromeboxes. They prefer them to Chromebooks, but they don't move around much. The reason people prefer Chromebooks, because depending on what Chrome devices, whether it's a book or a box, depending on what they do, they don't have to worry about, you know, they can do everything they need to do, and they don't worry about updates, they don't worry about viruses, they don't worry about any of that nonsense. And they get along quite fine with their devices as they are. So if you're looking to get something, and again, the Chromebooks at $400 to $600 are also the higher-end Chromebooks that will also run Google apps, Android apps.
Right. Yeah.
So if that's important to you, then that's the price. You know, the price of poker keeps going up, and if you want to play in the higher games, you pay the antes just the way you pay it.
And traditionally, that has been, laptops have always cost more than desktops.
Right.
For the same power.
Right.
Yeah, no, I got you right. I understand that. And you're right, as I was pricing those too, but as I understand it, in terms of being mobility, et cetera, you have to, if you have a Chromebook, you have to find a hotspot with a Wi-Fi, don't you?
Not necessarily. It depends on what you're doing. So, for example, I've written three books on my Chromebook. In each of them, I have it set up so that when I do something on the machine, it downloads a copy to my computer. And so as long as I remember to open up my document before I leave the house, I can go anywhere, and if there is no connection, it uses the local one, and if there is a connection, it uses the real one, I guess you want to call it, up on the website. And I've been in places, for example, in cafes, where I look up and realize that everybody around me is grumbling because they've lost connectivity. I'm writing away fine with no problems. And then suddenly, about 15 minutes later, I see all changes saved in drive. So the connection came back, and my machine synced up just like it's supposed to.
And it's kind of similar with a desktop computer. If you want to do something on the internet, you have to have an internet connection.
Right.
If you're just typing a file on either Chromebook or anything, you don't need to have an internet connection.
Right.
No, no, but I understand. But a desktop at your house, for example,
right.
I mean, you've got the internet connection all the time, right?
Right, 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 sure. Right, right. And I'm all for it. I have a desktop, and I do 90% of my work on that. I only take my Chromebook out when I want to be mobile. You know, when I get tired of writing in my computer room, I grab my Chromebook, and I go to a cafe or a whatever, and I sit and write there for a while. But in either case, I'm doing all my work on Google Drive, so I can get at it from any device, anywhere, anytime.
Well, what happens if you could you run that through your mobile phone? I mean, you eat up a lot of data. But
I have done that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
I'm not familiar with the first way you talked about. It sounds neat to be able to do that, but I just am more concerned about security and, you know, using a Wi-Fi, public Wi-Fi network, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, again, yes, and I agree with that, and that's why I'm always very careful to only go to places that are secure. HTTPS. The S stands for secure. And if you do that, you're in good shape. You just have to be careful and pay attention.
Right, gotcha. Okay, some good thoughts. Thanks, I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Mike. Yeah, it gets complex when you look at all the ramifications. But in general, whether you're using a Chromebook or a laptop versus
a
Chrome box or a desktop or a tablet or whatever, you need to be aware of the method of connectivity and after that, the way you connect through that method of connectivity. So if you're on your Ethernet connection, then that in itself is not a secure connection. What makes it secure is the fact that you're going HTTPS. The same is true when you're using your phone as a hotspot. The phone itself is not an encrypted device, but the HTTPS that you send through it is. And similarly, if you're on an open Wi-Fi network. And of course, I personally never go on an open Wi-Fi network with anything except my Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only device that I know, at least so far, is not going to be caught by anything.
Yep.
I get a little annoyed on my iPad how many games require an internet connection just to like update a level or
right.
You know, complete a task. It has to sync back to the internet.
Right, right, right. So yeah, it's you want to be careful. You have to be careful no matter what you're using. But a Chromebook frees you up from some of the things you would worry about. So like that day that I got the notice on this machine that my Windows machine was infected.
Well,
that's pretty unlikely because I'm on a Chromebook.
And that's the other thing that you don't have to fight. How many folks have gotten called and they've gotten their machine either messed up or bricked because of the Windows update? You don't also have to put up with viruses, spyware, and malware.
Right. Right. And when somebody calls you up and says, we're from Microsoft, there's a problem with your machine.
Yeah.
You can say, I'm pretty sure that's not true because I don't have a Microsoft machine.
Yeah. Well, and the same thing, you know, just going from a Chrome box to, say, a Chrome tablet.
Right.
You know, it's what fits you best. Some folks don't like laptops or the Chromebook look. You know,
right.
The tablet look, because they want a regular keyboard. So that's where maybe a Chrome box is better, where you can hook up a bigger screen or, you know, and have a full-size keyboard and mouse.
That's the other problem is some people's eyes are getting older.
Yeah.
And we have...
Not older, ancient.
Ancient. and I cry dust now. Yep. But we have an issue with that, and so having a larger screen is a better thing for us.
That's now, one of the advantages and also the curse of Windows laptops and other companies. There's 100 companies making 10,000 products. How do you choose?
Right.
If you want an Apple, there's 3.
Right.
And then variations on those 3.
Right. If you want something beyond those 3, then you got a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem some people have with tablets, whether it's an iPad or anything else. It's not a particularly large screen. Even the 10-inch tablets are not a particularly large screen. And some people have a lot of trouble with that.
And then you get the bigger tablets, you know, 12, 13, 15. I saw a 19-inch tablet once. That's just unwieldy.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then, of course, people hold them up to take pictures.
Yeah.
Of things. No. Sorry.
Speaking of age.
Uh-oh.
You know what next weekend is?
Yes, I do. Next weekend is the beginning, hurtling headlong into our 29th year on the air.
30.
No, 29. We've been on the air for 28 years, 11 months, and 22 days.
I thought we were going to 30.
No, we're going to 20. We will go to 30, but not this year.
Yeah.
This year it's 29 years. It says so right on our website.
Well, so we've been here then for 9 years.
Yeah.
Because we celebrated our 20th anniversary.
Seems like 15. Time sure flies.
Yeah.
No, yeah. So, the 3rd, September 3rd is the actual
anniversary date.
And so we'll be 29 years on the air, hurtling headlong into our 30th year.
Right. We've completed
28 years, 11 months, and 22 days. So on the 3rd, we will have completed 29 years heading into our 30th year.
Dang.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. We have a 29th birthday on the 3rd. So we're very excited about that. All right, listen, that music tells me that you have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. Now, you're going to get a chance to do it again. Because we're just going to take a slightly longer break, but then we will be back with way too much of Dave Enright, certainly not enough of Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you're halfway through this edition of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, you're listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can remain member-supported. Jazz 90.1. Don't go away. Or if you do go away for a quick bio break, come back. Because we'll be back in just a few more minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Yep, it's Soundbites.
And we want to apologize to our YouTube viewers.
Who can't see anything.
Who can't see anything right now, so hopefully you turned on the radio or...
Started the stream.
The audio stream. Yeah. Forgot my power cord for my computer, and it... didn't last the hour.
Well, you know, too bad you don't know anybody who sells power cords. You could stick an extra one in a box somewhere.
I would have forgotten it.
Yeah.
No, it'd be on somebody else's computer.
Yeah. Someone else's computer.
Which That's is where it is. It's in the office running someone else's computer.
Yeah. All right. Microsoft last week said that it will pair the size of Windows 10's monthly updates once version 18.09 reaches customers' PCs this fall. The next major version of Windows 10 and Windows Server will each be labeled 18.09 in Microsoft's year-month format, which denotes the purported month of release. So this would be the September of 2018, 18.09. Now, ideally, the feature upgrade for both lines will debut next month, but Microsoft's cadence usually runs a month later. Beginning with Windows 10 1809 and Windows Server 1809, only one size of quality update will ship. No more B, C, or D designations. That update will be considerably smaller than what Apple now calls the full update.
Yeah, Microsoft.
What?
Microsoft.
Did I say Apple? I'm reading Microsoft. Cheese and crackers. Which sometimes uses the moniker of latest cumulative update or LCU. The quality updates, well, and I don't know why they call them quality updates, but I guess, you know, truth in advertising doesn't apply. The quality updates will also be slightly larger than what Microsoft refers to as its express updates. Did you know that there were several different types of updates? There's not only full updates, full A, B, C, and D updates. There's also LCU's latest cumulative update. There's quality updates. There's express updates.
Sounds like they're making things more complicated than they need to.
Well, now they're turning them all into just these individual one-type update. Currently, Microsoft stirs up three different sizes of quality updates for Windows 10. And that's not... Yeah, this is all inside the quality update. There's the full quality update, the express quality update, and the Delta quality update. Last month, Microsoft told customers they would stop Delta update deliveries effective February 12, 2019. Yes, we're starting to plan for 2019, leaving just full and express updates for Windows 10, 1803, and earlier. But Microsoft's announcement last week reduces those three to just one for Windows 10 and Windows 10 and Windows Server 1809 and later. Starting with the next major version of Windows 10 and Windows Server, there will be only one quality update type, and it will be smaller in size, redistributable, and simpler to manage, Microsoft said. The new smaller quality updates will be delivered directly through Windows Update as well as indirectly via Microsoft's Windows Server Update Services and System Center Configuration Manager tools or by third-party patch management platforms. They will also be posted to the Microsoft Update Catalog and standalone installer format, or as you may know at the MSUs, Microsoft standalone update. Depending on how a personal computer, server, or other Windows device receives monthly updates, the savings in download or transmission times may be substantial. Update size has been a problem for both current and potential Windows 10 users. If you have WSUS in the back end, those files have to be stored somewhere. While the system rolls them out, if you're on a crappy ISP, a lousy internet, or a lousy dial-up, having a gigabyte or more of an update come down every month means you blow your bandwidth. In the case of mobile laptops, they don't get updated very often like they should because people block the updates because they take so long. So this should mitigate any or all of that. So are you looking forward to smaller updates? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I updated this Chromebook this morning while I was eating breakfast. I set it up. I said, look for an update. It said, oh, yeah, I got one. I'm downloading it now. Poof. A couple of minutes later, it was done. It says, reboot. You're on your way. Cool. Finished.
Yep.
Finished. And if I didn't do that, it would update in the background while I was doing other stuff. And I would see a little arrow in the thing, a little up arrow that says update. You know, right? So... the next time I rebooted, it would be there. That's one of the lovely things. It's why a lot of folks are buying their elderly parents and grandparents Chromebooks, because they are very easy to use and set up, and more importantly, because they never have to think about updating. Yeah. As long as they're using it, it's going to update in the background. They shut it down, they start it up again tomorrow, and it's the new operating system. You're done. There's no, and they're not going to call you up and say, I think I got a virus, got this, I got that. It doesn't happen.
The update for the operating system didn't take, or it's, you know, it's not booting.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it doesn't happen.
It bricked my machine.
Yeah.
Right. You don't get any of that. And Microsoft has their new update service, and they're starting in September with 1809. If you're wondering, if you're running... 1803 or 1709 or 1703 or blah, 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 blah. You will not see this. You'll have to update to 1809 in order to get it. But if you've got that major update, you should start seeing simpler upgrades and
but 1809's not out yet.
What?
1809's not even out yet, is it?
Well, they're saying in September.
The second Tuesday of September.
Right. Or although likely it'll actually happen in October for most people. Well, that's
just a fact.
Generally a month late, with that stuff. Linux has been doing this for years. You can, you know, you can get the 1804 version or the 1809 version. I'm currently running 1604 because that is the LTS long-term support
stable release.
Right. And so the 1804 is also an LTS, a long-term support release. I just haven't, I've updated on my laptop. I have not updated on my desktop because updating scares me because I had so many years of Windows bricking my machine. I have no faith anymore. I admit it. I have lost faith in the update process. But my Chromebooks never have a problem.
Well, that's why, you know, still going back to when I have to laugh when I think back of that person that called in. I think it was a little over, what, a month and a half ago. And they went to some place. They said, oh, yeah, Windows Defender, and that is the one you should rely on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like, how? Why?
Right.
They don't update it as regular as, you know, we recommend doing Super Anti-Spoiler or Malware Bytes.
Right.
All these other programs that are supposedly Windows products.
They only update once a month.
Yeah, hello.
That's a lot of time. That's a big window.
There's 29 other days on, say, an average month of 30 days that you can get infected.
Right. I have to say, there was indeed one time when the update failed. And it was in the middle of updating, and there was a power failure.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
That'll do it for any operating system. But
although laptops have their own battery, it shouldn't have.
But no, well, I lost the download itself.
Oh, the download failed.
Yeah, well.
So when it came back up, it said, hold on, there's a problem. Let me reload the operating system from scratch. And all by itself, it just said, I'm doing that now. It took a little bit longer. It download. I had to reconnect to wireless.
Yep.
It updated to a fairly recent version, and then did a whole nother update. And I was back, and it took a little bit longer. But I didn't actually touch.
Probably nowhere near as long as a crashed Windows.
No,
update
it took
would
nowhere
take.
Near as long as a crashed Windows update would take. But also, aside from having to type in the password to my wireless, I didn't touch the machine. It did it all automatically by itself. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Penfield, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Hi, guys. Question about a Chromebook. You've got me thinking it's probably time to buy one.
Yeah.
But I was a little confused by what you were talking about earlier when you talked to screen size limitations.
Sure.
Because I was under the impression that I could simply get an external monitor and connect it up somehow.
Well, you can. But that was my point. There's two different devices that you can use. There is the Chromebook, which is a laptop.
Right.
And some people find you can get. I have a 15-inch Chromebook. So that's fine, but I also have a 13-inch Chromebook, which is okay.
And like the 199 models are probably a 10-inch.
They're 10-inch or 11-inch, and I can't. I have an 11-inch, and it's not as easy for me to read anymore. I don't want to read it all day long. And so there is also something called a Chrome box, which is essentially kind of a hockey puck sized box that you
desktop
plug.
Desktop computer.
It's a desktop, it's a desktop computer. You plug your own monitor, which you can then have any size you want, and your own mouse and keyboard, but it's still a Chrome device, and you can do all the Chrome things and have all the Chrome safety and et cetera, but it's just a box.
And many of the Chrome laptops have HDMI ports on them, so you can even plug that into another
monitor. And I was about to say, so if you want to plug an extra monitor into your Chromebook, as long as it's an HDMI monitor and you have an HDMI cable, you're good to go.
Okay. I wasn't sure about what the connection had to be, but if it's HDMI, that's easy to check for.
Right, and it depends on which Chromebook you buy. Some of them have full-size HDMI. Some of them have USB-C to HDMI. So you have to pay attention to which model you're buying as to what cable you
buy. It's the same thing and the same choices with Windows laptops and Mac laptops.
Right.
You know, what features, what ports.
Mm-hmm.
what size screen.
How many USB ports are on it.
Right. This is a beautiful, which model is this? The
MacBook Pro.
Pro.
2017.
One connector? Two connectors?
Four.
Well, this one has four.
This has four, but they're all Type-C.
Right, right. So you have to have a Type-C connection, whether it's HDMI or USB or whatever. It's all Type-C.
Yeah.
But that's the basic idea. You take a look at what machine you have. They all have HDMI capability. You just have to figure out which cable you need, and that's all. That's not a big deal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm in
the process of trying to figure out the combination of features, connections, screen size, and memory, and all the other stuff to figure out how I can minimize my cost and maximize what I want. And
right. No, I get it. It's not an easy choice
anymore. Do your
homework, yep. But I'll tell you one other nice thing is if you have two monitors on a Chromebook, just as you can with Windows or the Mac, you can split between them. So you can have different things appear on each monitor. Everybody thinks of Chromebooks as somehow a lesser device. If you can do it with Windows or a Mac, that except for some very, very specialized pieces of software, you can do it with a Chromebook.
I'm looking forward to it. I need some simplification in my life.
I'm telling you, I don't want to buy hardware anymore that isn't a Chromebook. My Linux box. I do some things that require me to have a more robust programming environment and a couple of other things. And for that, I love my Linux box. But beyond that, I don't want to have to deal with it. My daughter called me and said, "Dad, I need a new computer." I said, "Get a Chromebook and don't ever call me again. I don't even know who you are." Hey, I may not have quite said that, but...
Yeah. Was that a subtle hint, "Dad, buy me a new computer"?
Not that subtle. Not that subtle at all, no. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. But she wants a gaming rig, and that's going to be an expensive piece of hardware. But the reality is that if you're not a high-end gamer, you can do pretty much anything you want to do on a Chromebook of whatever size. So your real limitations are, as you said, Larry, the amount of RAM, the size of your screen, like that.
Okay, well, thanks for clearing up my confusion.
There you go. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Now that we've unconfused Larry, we're going to rest on our laurels for a couple of minutes. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
There's no camera. Go ahead.
Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you people just missed the best air drum solo you have ever, would have ever seen. And of course, you can give us a call. It's not to talk about air drum solos, but to talk about computery type stuff. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. In the meantime, exploding lithium-ion batteries can wreak havoc on airline flights or in waste facilities after people toss their old electronics into the trash. Now, scientists at Oak Ridge National Laboratory have come up with a new chemical recipe that could combat the problem. A lithium battery has two electrodes separated by a thin plastic sheet and submerged in a liquid electrolyte. That's a chemical medium, usually a flammable lithium-ion fluid that allows charge to flow between a lithium-ion cathode to a carbon anode. When that thin plastic sheet breaks due to too much jostling in the cargo hold of an airplane, for instance, the electrodes can come together, shorting out the battery. This produces heat, which can ignite the liquid electrolyte, and boom, you have a fire in the cargo hold or your pocket. That's why the FAA and Pyro Dave over here, who had a phone that was prone to that, although his did not.
Mine was fine, and there was nothing wrong with the first one that I had. That never caused me any issue, but they insisted I had to trade it in, so I did. And even the second one,
right?
They, what got me though was, after that one incident, Right. And I go in there and said, all right, well, I got to get, what's my options? And they wanted me to go into this other direction. And I go, I already saw that the Google phone is coming out.
Right.
And I go, no, I'm going to wait for the Google phone. No, you can't. Excuse me? Why can't I? Well, it could catch on fire. And I go, yeah, and I could get hit by a runaway garbage truck, too. You know, I'll take my odds. There has not been any problem with this. If it gets a little warm in my pocket, I'll take it out and put it down. Hello? Right. And I waited the 2 weeks.
Concrete.
Yeah. I waited 2 weeks, you know, specifically for the Google phone. And it was the best decision I ever made.
Yeah, they're nice phones. Anyway, that's why the FCC prohibits anything containing lithium-ion batteries in checked baggage. In 2017 alone, the agency reported 46 incidents of exploding batteries on airplanes, which doesn't sound a lot, but I want zero incidents of explosions on airplanes. Non-flammable solid electrolytes could solve the problem, but Oak Ridge National Laboratory physicist Gabriel Veith says this would require a significant overhaul of the production process for lithium-ion batteries, a considerable capital expense the manufacturers might not wish to make. That's why he and his cohorts are researching ways to tweak the conventional electrolyte recipe. Speaking at this week's meeting of the American Chemical Society in Boston, Veith said he found inspiration for a tweak while introducing his kids to a cornstarch and water mixture popularly known as Oobleck. The nickname is a nod to the Dr. Seuss children's tale, Bartholomew and the Oobleck, in which, did you know that? That's where it came from. In which a magic spell gone awry causes sticky green stuff to rain down from the sky. The real world Oobleck is an example of a non-Newtonian fluid. Isaac Newton's definition of an ideal liquid is one which has the viscosity, which is how much friction or resistance there is to flow, where the viscosity is primarily dependent on temperature and pressure. That is, water flows the same even if you apply a shearing force by stirring or mixing. For non-Newtonian fluids, however, like Oobleck, the viscosity changes in response to a shearing force. Initially, the particles in the substance, in this case a colloid, where cornstarch grains are suspended in water, are loosely bonded, but any sharp impact causes the bonds to strengthen, so the particles lock in place.
It gets hard when you hit it.
Yeah. Punch a bowl of Oobleck and it hardens into a solid, softening again as the energy dissipates. That's why if you can take a 10 or 8 or 10 year old child, and they can walk across.
You can do it with people. MythBusters did a lot of experiments with Oobleck.
Technically, it's a sheer thickening fluid of the sort used in prototype bulletproof vests or the smart armor first worn by Canadian skiers in the 2006 Winter Olympics. Veith realized that this property could be invaluable in an electrolyte solution, which would solidify in response to impact and prevent the two electrodes from touching. The recipe is simple. Just suspend sphere-shaped silicon nanoparticles in the usual liquid electrolytes used for lithium-ion batteries. Your work is done. The tricky part is ensuring all the nanoparticles are the same size, 200 nanometers in diameter. Otherwise, it has the opposite effect, and the liquid becomes less viscous upon impact, which is a sheer thinning fluid. And that's bad, said Veith. Again, kaboom. There's a slight trade-off in terms of reduced battery capacity and slower charging, but otherwise performance is comparable to the current crop of lithium-ion batteries, and it will only require a small modification to the production process. So are you ready for some Seuss in your batteries? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 at toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, there was a special on Nova a couple of years ago about a solid electrolyte. And I've been wondering where it is, and that story says everyone's got to change your production procedure to do that. But if we can make a non-flammable liquid electrolyte, that would be even better.
Right. If we can just inject something into the current process, at a minimum cost, they'd be more likely to do it. Particularly if they then can say our batteries don't explode, which would be nice. That's of course not the only reason batteries explode. There's other ways to short them out. There's other issues that can take place.
Idiots on YouTube with a drill.
Idiots on YouTube with a drill, that'll certainly do it.
And they're surprised when it bursts into flames.
Yeah,
right. One of the issues that Galaxy Note 7?
Yep.
One of the issues that had was that in certain circumstances it would bend, which would also cause those two electrodes to come into contact
with each other
and therefore short out and cause a fire. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't change with Oobleck because the bending would be slow enough that it wouldn't,
be instantaneous.
Make the oobleck go hard. So
yeah,
it's still not perfect. Whereas the solid state battery, the solid electrolyte battery that Steve saw, you can cut it up. And it keeps on going.
That was so freaky watching him do that. Big pair of scissors cutting the battery apart and the iPad that was connected. You just kept working.
It didn't care. Reduced.
Yeah, the battery charge went down.
Right.
But as you cut off 10% of your battery, you lose 10% of your life.
So you can, you know, one of the issues that they have is that you can, if the circumstances are correct, just drop a phone out of your pocket and have it burst into flame. But that would not happen with a solid-state battery and would be much, much, much less likely to happen with the oobleck battery.
And the thing is I don't get, you know, I understand, you know, making, you know, the phones small and, you know, easy to carry around and everything else. But sometimes they just get ridiculous and, you know, well, it's 3 millimeters thinner. Well, hello, my Google phone is not that big, not that heavy to carry around compared to the old bricks that we used to carry around, you know, and to lose that, say, 3 millimeters, which usually equates to, some other feature had to be trimmed back in the phone, like, a smaller battery or a thinner battery, which, you know, holds less power. You know what? Give me the 3 millimeters back. Mm-hmm. And give me the bigger battery size because in getting things smaller and thinner, they've got to cut other options out. They can only pack so much power in such a small space and creating that much heat that, you know, something's got to give.
And it's usually them. 3 millimeters is a tenth of an inch.
Yeah.
Honestly, you're not going to notice that in day-to-day use. You're just not.
No.
Unless you're extremely sensitive.
Well, the thing that is between my Galaxy 7 Note and this Google phone, I think it was a couple millimeters thicker.
Right.
They go, you know, this is a little bit bigger. I go, huh? Well, it's 2 millimeters thicker.
Than a tenth of an inch.
I'm looking at it as, you know, no, I'm not going to notice that.
Somebody last night was telling me he's an horologist.
Okay.
And so he's talking about itty bitty screws. So we got talking about that with the itty bitty screws in computers. The screws in clocks are even smaller.
Yeah, they really are.
The lines on your fingerprints are about a millimeter apart.
Yeah.
So that's a way to you know, that's about a millimeter.
Right. Yeah. So three of those, you're really going to notice that. You know, what are you, the princess and the pea? Get over yourself.
Yeah, really. Nobody, everybody's carrying them around. You know, I mean, that little bit, I'd rather have that little bit back.
Give me a bigger battery. Give me a stronger case. Give me a larger screen. I don't need it to be super thin. And I blame Steve Jobs entirely on that whole mania. And I get it.
The car industry started it. This year we've got fins. Fins are great. You know, a couple years later, you don't want fins.
You don't want fins. You want grill.
You want a massive chrome grill.
Right. Yeah. But yes, and that's exactly the point. You've got last year's phone.
Well, this is the thing. Mine is just about paid for. I think I got 2 more months on it. You know, and it's like, I was looking at some of the others, and it's like, wait, this does everything and anything I want it to do. It's got a beautiful camera on it. Until it dies, no, I'm not getting rid of it.
They're trying to make up features that we don't know we need. Right. So they're adding more cameras so you can do depth data, so now you can do three-dimensional things on your phone, which is really going to be big in AR and VR when that finally catches on.
Right. But I was looking at new phones. Mine is the Galaxy S5. I think it's
you're in the 9 now. You're behind
60 or 70 years old. Yeah, but it does. It's a little slow, but it does everything I need it to
do. Does your 5 have a GPS in it?
Yes, it has a GPS.
Can I have
it
when you're done?
Yeah,
because my 3 doesn't have a GPS in it.
but it's got a replaceable battery and it's got wireless charging. And really, I like those two features the most. I like to be able to replace my battery, and I like to be able to charge it wirelessly. But now everybody's concentrating on stuff that I just don't care about. I don't need 16 cameras on the back, all with 42 depths of field. I don't care.
Yeah.
It just gets to the point where it becomes fairly ridiculous. All right, that's that. We're going to go to the phones. Our next caller, here's a surprise. It's Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. I'm just listening to you talk about the thickness of the phones and stuff, and I just start laughing because the first thing I do when I get a phone is I put a padded leather case around it that hooks to my belt so I can protect it.
Right.
So 3 millimeters is... It could be that thick and still fit in the same case they put it in now. So
right, that's exactly right. I keep mine in a case on my belt because it's just easier and much more convenient than sticking it in my pocket. And I see people all day long with their phones hanging half out of their pockets. And yours is at least most of the way in.
Yeah.
I see them drop them all the time.
I'm afraid to put mine in my back pocket, so I put it in my front pocket. Because I used to use a belt clip, and I would—I don't know why—but I catch it on door frames all the time.
Yeah, I got rid of my belt clip one, and I got this one case. It's by—I forget who made it, but I've dropped this thing, and it's so well protected on the corners and everything else. And I've got the glass, the actual glass cover,
right?
And that has saved this phone because I did the stupid mistake of one time putting a screwdriver in my back pocket, and it cracked the screen. It didn't crack the main screen, it just cracked the protector.
Right.
So I was good.
One thing that I've discovered is that I drop my phone all the time. It's the patented Francesco drop test, every device I have. And I discovered that when my phone hits the floor, it bursts apart. The back comes off, the battery goes flying, and all the energy of the impact goes into doing that. Which is why things break. That's the whole idea behind crumple zones in cars. You use all your energy doing that, and that energy is then not transferred to something else, like the screen of my phone. So I appreciate that. All right, sorry, Andy. We got off of that.
That's okay. I get a chuckle out of that, and. The thing is I watch putting it in my back pocket because my problem is I put it in the back pocket, and then if I don't remember to take it out, I sit on it.
Yep.
Right, right.
Well, then you want a bendable phone.
Well, Samsung's been talking about a foldable phone forever, and I don't see it yet.
There was the prototype phone announced. I saw a quick video on it. Let me see if we can find it again.
Oh, good.
Where it folds in half and then folds open again. So it's the size of a phone, but then when it folds open, it's a tablet. I always like the one from Andromeda.
All right, thanks,
Andy.
Sorry about that. Yeah, it came in a cylinder and you unrolled it.
Yeah, I really like that.
Which would probably be easier than a folding screen.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. As member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Now, I hesitate to do this next story. Because every week there's 50 new rumors about what Apple is going to be putting out.
Yeah.
And 99% of them, by definition, have to be wrong.
But since the rumored announcement is in September, the rumored changes and new devices have to be already in production.
You would think so. So this could be good.
Yeah.
So take this with as many grains of salt as you feel you need to. Apple plans to release a new replacement for the MacBook Air and possibly the current MacBook with a Retina display later this year, according to a report in Bloomberg. And they're usually pretty good. More surprising, the report also claims an updated Mac Mini is right around the corner. The report comes from Bloomberg's Mark Gurman and Debbie Wu. Bloomberg has built a reputation recently on breaking news of major Apple innovations and products before they are announced. As always, the report cites people familiar with Apple's plans. The new Mac Mini would be geared more toward pro users than its predecessors, the report says, with more powerful specifications but steeper pricing. Apple doesn't really want the low end of the market. They don't care. The previous Mac Mini is something of a cult hit with independent software developers. This report suggests Apple will double down on that. That would move the Mac Mini farther away from one of its original purposes, a cheap consumer home theater PC, likely because that product category has been replaced by devices like the Apple TV or various Roku dongles and boxes, among other things. Since the Mac Mini wasn't updated for a long time, users began to suspect the writing was on the wall for the device. But Apple has previously promised that's not the case. In an email to a customer late last year, Apple CEO Tim Cook said that the Mac Mini wasn't dead. The last major update to the Mac Mini was not well received by users and critics. Released, this, to put it lightly, released in 2014, it eliminated the quad-core CPU option, frustrating pro users with steep performance needs. It was also less serviceable and upgradable, and we lost the Mac Mini server configuration and one 2.5-inch drive expansion bay. And here's a tidbit that demonstrates just how woefully out of date the 2014 Mini is. It only supports 4K displays or TVs at 30 hertz. And then there's the new MacBook. The wording of the report implies that the new machine will merge with the MacBook Air and the MacBook product lines, borrowing the industry design of the MacBook Air and the high-resolution display of the MacBook. Hopefully, it doesn't borrow the MacBook's lack of ports. The basic design of Apple's MacBook Air has been essentially unchanged for several years. It is the only Mac in Apple's current lineup to lack what the company deems a Retina, and the rest of the world calls a high DPI display. It is also currently the only Mac laptop to have a full-sized USB-A port instead of the new USB-C standard, and the only one without a butterfly keyboard design. On the other hand, today's MacBook offers the new keyboard design and USB-C, but it has only one port, which you probably have to use to plug in the power adapter, or as Steve does, leave it at work.
And I have four ports, but four only ports. One plug.
Right. It's also very expensive for such a limited machine. It starts at $1,300. These two machines will presumably be targeted at a similar market, so it makes sense to combine their strengths in one product if that is feasible, according to the Bloomberg report.
How did you just tweet me?
What did I do?
You just tweeted me.
I did not just tweet you.
Yes, you did.
Oh, yeah, I did. Okay, I'll explain that in a minute. According to the Bloomberg, I'm magic.
Yes, you are.
According to the Bloomberg report, the new MacBook will have a 13-inch screen and similar dimensions to the MacBook Air, but it will reduce the size of the bezels around the screen. The report does not provide many more details except to say that Apple hopes this machine will make a dent in the education market. So are you ready for new Apple hardware? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, one of the things that they said in their marketing material, the 12-inch MacBook with only one port on it, you got wireless printing, wireless internet, wireless peripherals. Most people don't ever plug anything in besides the power cord.
Right.
And I don't know if we'll see wireless charging computers yet, because generally they need really high wattage.
Right. 60 watts.
Well, if my 15-inch computer is 80 watts.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the 5 watts you were getting off of here wasn't enough for you, yeah.
Yep. The iPad wants 12 watts.
Right. And I get that, but it's a very interesting thing if they do merge them. Apple has had a reputation for seeming, at least, to offer fewer choices. As you pointed out, there's 3 models and about 2,000 variations of those 3 models, so it's not really any less... Confusing. Excuse me. I apparently have the hiccups now. I thought that was water. Apparently, it's vodka.
So yeah. There was a question recently at Apple's developer conference: would they merge iOS and macOS? And there's
somebody. Who cares? I don't care.
He's about 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
And there's a giant no that looks to be about 18 feet tall.
Yeah, right.
They're not going to merge them, but okay, sure.
Well, and that's very unlike what Google is doing with the Chromebooks. The current Chromebooks...
They are intentionally merging Chrome and Android.
Well, yeah. they're sort of doing that. The Chromebooks, currently the newer ones, can run Android apps.
Right, and Apple is doing that too.
Right.
The Mac OS will be able to
run
iPhone
apps. Which
is
not really merging the two operating systems. The future version, they're saying 1809 or maybe 1904 version of the Chrome OS will also run Linux apps, which is very exciting. Now, the problem with that is you're going to need more RAM. You're going to need a more powerful processor. It's going to take longer to boot up, and you're losing some of the abilities.
Price of poker keeps going up.
Right.
You're running three OSs.
Right. You're essentially running three OSs. But, again, you get to choose then. You can choose the lowest-end stuff, which lets you do everything you can do with a Chromebook now. The medium-end stuff, which adds Android apps, most of which most people don't use because there are equivalents already in the App Store, in the Play Store, for Chromebooks, and then on top of that, you can add Linux things. Now, the ability to run something like Blender, you know, but those are very high-end programs.
Mm-hmm.
And again, most of the time, you can find an equivalent program. For example, I have friends who say, "Well, I can never run a Chromebook because it doesn't do audio." Well, yeah, actually, it does. There are the programs you can run that will do audio for you. Do they work exactly the same as Audacity? No. But they do everything Audacity does.
It's just probably learning a different, like anything else, you know.
Right.
Like you've always said, you know, getting into a different car.
Right.
They all drive the same. It's just that the buttons and that.
Where's
might
the radio?
Be, yeah, right. Different places.
What side is it? My new car, the gas cap is on the other side.
Oh, how annoying is that?
And the opposite side of my wife's car, so I'm constantly pulling up to the wrong side of the pump.
Well, you know that the gas gauge has the little,
arrow on it. Yep, so I have to remember it. So it's on the other side now.
Just look down as you pull in.
Yep.
That'll become second nature after about a year of frustration. But yeah, and the same thing is true, like I said, of Linux. You can do most of the things in a Chromebook that you can do other way. I have a friend who does video editing on his Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
Works great. He puts out some amazing stuff. So you can do pretty much anything. You know, the myth that Chromebooks are limited is just that, a myth. The only thing I don't do on the Chromebook is some programming. And that's simply because the tools I've been using on the Mac for decades, on Linux for decades, I'm
better.
Just so familiar with. Well, they don't work better. I'm just so familiar with them. Yeah. That I want to use them. And most of the time when I'm programming, I'm sitting in my computer room anyway, so I might as well use the tools I'm familiar with on the machine I'm familiar with. So
why reinvent the wheel?
Why reinvent the wheel? But for everything else, the Chromebook does everything I want it to do. And in fact, I've pretty much stopped using OpenOffice, LibreOffice. I certainly don't use Microsoft Office or iWorks. Is that what it is this week?
They stopped using that branding, but yeah, iWork.
Yeah. But yeah, so I don't use those anymore. I do everything in Google Docs because, like I said before, I can do it on my desktop and laptop.
Who needs styles?
What?
Who needs fonts and styles?
Well, you have them in there.
You have the thing of it is, though, with Google Docs, I mean, I'd say, 75-80% of the folks, if you had Word and Google Docs, the features that you use in Word on the average user are there in Google Docs.
Right.
All these other features that they kept trying to add to Office and, you know, to do this and do that, maybe only 10% of the population actually use. Most folks are just trying to create a simple letter and mail it out. And you can also change it to a PDF, which, Word didn't do.
Right.
Whereas Google Docs and that, you can.
Right. There's an extension, by the way, for Google Docs called Extensis Fonts.
Mm-hmm.
And it lets you use thousands of fonts.
Yep.
So, yeah, that sort of stuff is all available, and Dave is right.
Do you intentionally,
it does what you need to do.
Do you intentionally put your poll back to Courier, or you just use the same template every week?
I intentionally put it in Courier.
Yeah.
So that I can...
So it looks like a typewriter.
Yeah. So that's the way that works. All right. That music tells me that we are done for another week. I really want to thank everybody who called in. Good discussions this week, as always. I want to thank Dave Enright. I probably should thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week long. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be what?
I forgot to say, you know, come join us flying. No, I can't say that. Right. I'm going to be flying the Rochester Aeromodeling Society in Macedon. We're having our annual fly-in and open house this
weekend.
Well,
have fun with that.
I'll be flying there.
And we'll be back in just a week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. We're Soundbites. Right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You that we can remain member-supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.